Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends.
And Brian Brushwood.
It is true. You are joined by me.
So, we decided on the last episode of After Things that instead of talking about our little endeavors ad nauseum, emphasis on the nauseum, we were going to try to help you all with some of your businesses, some of your plans, and offer our wisdom, what if it there is, and brainstorm for you some thoughts or suggestions on things that you could do. So we said, go ahead, send them on to us over at, we use Neshcom's email address, and he's not here. So one did find its way to me, and if anybody listening to this right now has a question or some sort of idea or something they want us to discuss, go ahead, send it to contact@andrewmain.com, and I will read it. In the meantime, I'm going to jump right in to the first one we had. Is from James Harrison. He starts off, sorry for emailing this to you directly. Oh, okay.
All right, look, already. Come on, man. Let's have a little more enthusiasm. You got to believe in yourself.
I just didn't want to get Neshcom's email wrong, period. Well, you know what? You chose correctly, James, because we didn't plan forward. You said to send work-related questions to guys at the Weird Tank, and you'll help the best way you can. I perform a fair amount in my area, Greater Toronto Area, and I want to expand. How do I book myself in an area that I'm not known for? If I want to perform in, say, England or Japan, how do I even start to try and book myself in these different countries when no one there knows who I am? Is there a right way to do this? Are there any pitfalls to avoid? Are some venues easier than others? Instead of trying to book one show that is worth it to travel there, or is it better to try and book several shows in a small tour? Thanks, you three. Miss the Wood Goblin sittings from Russia. I hope the Yetis don't overpower them in their ongoing battle for supremacy over the forest. I think we'll talk more about that. Now, just for clarification, James Harrison, I'm going to click on a link. He's a magician, does pickpocket magic. He's Canada's pickpocket magician.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's called from time to time over the years, and I've heard a little bit about his show, and he's offered some really good, helpful information for scam school-related stuff on pickpocketing when we touched on it. Man, here's what's fascinating is... in my experience, and I'd be interested to hear if you feel the same way, Andrew, is I know that I get treated with more respect, I command a higher fee, I work better venues and better paying gigs when they're nowhere near the area that I'm from. There's
no
something
man is an expert in his own country.
Exactly, right? I mean, it's like if anything, I mean, and that of course doesn't really answer your question of how, but the first thing as far as how, as I would say, remove any thoughts that it is an advantage to be working close to home, because I don't think it is. I think you work for less money and you get less respect.
I would have two suggestions for James. One is one that I've seen general entertainers will do if they want to expand into other markets. And that is one, choose a specific market or area you want to go into. Find out when they do their Fringe Festival. Many areas have their version of fringe festivals. Not many, but several. There's in the UK they have one, or there's Edinburgh has one too. There's like LA does a fringe. So there's a few different. I think probably like Australia. There's a few different these fringe festivals, which is just a period, a week or so, when it just tons and tons of different entertainers converge from around the world, rent out small little theaters, and put on. It's like a film festival but for live entertainment. And I've seen entertainers. What they do is they will. You know, they use their own money. They will go book a theater. They'll go promote and do what they can to get there. They will find out who the local bookers are, who are people there who are looking to hire acts in that area, and invite them and try to get them to their show. So I would highly advise that's one thing to look into, as I've seen a lot of, you know, success with people doing fringe festivals. I think that's actually how Cirque du Soleil got started, was Guy Lelabarte took a truck full of Cirque du Soleil props and entertainers, drove all the way down from Quebec to Los Angeles for, I think it was the Fringe Festival here, put on a show. People were like, oh my gosh, this was amazing. And Next thing you know, they started getting a lot of U.S. bookings, and that snowballed into a billion-dollar enterprise by him taking something that was – there were other shows like that in Quebec. There had been other things. There was a history of that there, but by bringing it down to L.A. where it was new and novel, it was able to take off. I think from there they went to do like New York bookings, and it just accelerated. So fringe festivals is one thing that applies to a lot of different entertainers, and we have people point out that Adelaide has a fringe festival, that there are a lot of these around the world, and if you use it right – like if you do a film festival – you don't just do your film, throw your film. If you get accepted, you don't just put it in there and think things that happen. You then need to go seek out reviewers, try to get them to come to your show, and buyers. Send press kits, invitations to buyers, so they'll send somebody, a representative there. And I'll tell you, like, we talked about this before, and it's interesting because, Kevin Smith has a new movie coming out. And a couple years ago, he went to I forget which film festival it was, where he went out on stage and announced that
Sundance
said that Red State wasn't going to be for sale, right?
Yeah, and then he just went on this giant screed about the current process and how angry he is that there's so much money spent on promotion that they're able to act like a movie is a financial failure when the whole budget was only $1 million or whatever.
Yeah, and meanwhile, you had a number of bookers who chose to go to that screening instead of other ones to look at other movies that are like, I could have been seeing this other thing these other people wanted me to go see, and you brought me here to yell at me.
Yeah.
And then his next movie, he did have somebody else release it. So I think A24 did Tusk. And it's like, oh, okay. But anyhow, but that's part of the value of those. That's what festivals is about, though, is you have bookers and buyers and people like that there, and that's same with live. If you're a magician, another option in James' case, is do you have an act that can be done for magicians, and do you have a lecture that you could do for magicians? And I would expect that if you've been performing for several years and you've been creating, you would. And there is an entire circuit of performing around the world of, I've had offers to do this, but I hesitate because I hate to plan a year in advance, but I've still been fortunate to go do fun stuff like go to China, go to Israel, go to other countries and go lecture to magicians and perform. And if you're really savvy when you go there, you find out who are bookers in that town, who are people that might want your act. And then when you go there, you can say, hey, come see me at this magic convention. Come watch me perform. And you can get the organizers to let you bring a booker in to go see you perform. And that's another way to do it. So that's a way to get paid to go do it. So you need a solid lecture that you can do for magicians with some product or notes and stuff that you can sell, and you want a show that you can co-perform for magicians. I just saw a couple nights ago at the Magic Castle, there's a magician by the name of Guy Hollingsworth, who's an incredible close-up magician. Fantastic.
He's amazing.
What's that?
He said he is amazing.
He's amazing.
Yeah. He just did a stage act, his first ever stage act, which was this really – it was done as he was a 1930s magician with the old-style big box microphone, and it was fantastic sleight of hand. And I looked at this. I said, this probably is – this may be something designed for magicians, because this is something that he can go around to all these – all these magic conventions and perform this on stage, as opposed to having to do, 8 close-up shows or something. So – there's a whole market there. So, James, that's my suggestion. Is one, if you want to go on a big level, think of fringe. The other way is to go through the magic route and think about conventions and lecture circuits.
Just another angle before we get Justin's take on it. In my experience, I would say figure out how to virtualize as much of your act as possible and send it out into the ether. Figure out at what price it is worth it for you to go to the other side of Canada. Figure out at what price it's worth it to you to go to the other side of the planet. And then once you have a good press kit, once you have materials that say this is an act that should get $5,000 for an evening performance, or $10,000 an evening performance, or $1,000 for an evening performance, wherever you're at, make sure you find out the bookers wherever they are and just take it big. The biggest, smartest decision I ever made was CJ Johnson and I split a booth at a college booking convention when there were 12 different regions back in the – maybe there were 10 different regions across the United States. And we went and we got, I think, 2 or 3 shows out of that one conference. And it occurred to me all I had to do was just apply and show up at all 10 regions, and I would have 30 shows because whatever the results were one, then it just seems like we just had to up it. And so I had to figure out how to retool my act so that it would fly easier. And then I just went and said yes to all of the conventions. And it was an insane, it was 2-3 months out of the year just on the road doing nothing but shaking hands, meeting people, handing out thousands, literally thousands and thousands of VHS tapes. And because there was this virtual representation of my show, that was a huge part in making people book me across the nation.
The only thing I'd say is make a mental decision on whether or not you are going some long distance to make money or to see the world. And both are valid. And I've known many very, very profitable magicians specifically that have said, like, all right, well, this is a lecture tour that I'm doing to make as much money as possible. And it is going to be grueling. And for me to make that kind of bank, I'm going to have to do a show every single day. I'm going to have to possibly do 2 shows a day. I'm not going to give myself a whole lot of time to enjoy the local fare aside from lunch. You know, pretty much everything, every meal I take is going to be fast food on the road. Or you say, hey, look, this isn't an excuse for me to see the UK. This is an excuse for me to see the United States. And they take extra time, and it's not a gigantic money maker for them, but they essentially have a vacation that pays for itself, and you get the amazing experience out of it. And I think making that decision before you think about it is crucial, because you don't want to say, hey, look, I've never been to Japan. I want to go to Japan, and then say, but yeah, and this is how I'm going to make my money. And then all of a sudden you do this trip and it's not necessarily all that enjoyable because you're working your butt off and you're like, man, well, it was really cool to be in Japan for a week and a half and not see anything that I had wanted to do. So just have that idea, that delineation in your mind.
Mm-hmm. That's critical. There are performers who lecture and do those sort of tours who do extremely well because they understand. One, they know when to say no, like, oh, it'll be 15 people and the average age is dead. I'm like, well, okay, they're not going to make any money. They're selling, you know, at the table. And that's a big thing is they know the money's made at the table with the product you sell. Or, you know, they'll go for bigger clubs, bigger environments and stuff and plan that and come up with really smart product. There's some guys in Magic who nonstop tour and they're at the big conventions and they're everywhere else and they have a great mind for product, et cetera, and all that. And they do that. And then there are other people like I would do it just like, oh, I want to go to this place. This will be fun. And if I have to sell something, I guess I will, but I'd rather just hang out.
Yeah. I mean, the fact is, if you're making money locally and your product is good and it sounds like you've been in the business long enough that and that you're good enough, ain't no reason you shouldn't be doing it everywhere, because the only thing that changes is you know, you charge a little bit more to justify the time to move your meat over to those places. You charge a little more to cover your costs for traveling, and basically all you do is you just replicate the exact same business that you've done locally, you do internationally all of a sudden.
We have a friend, his name's Jamie Porter, who's a magician in South Florida, and every time he goes to Magic Live, which is the big, every other year Magic convention put on by Magic Magazine, Jamie books shows in Las Vegas. He'll book school shows, and so he'll fly out there, and he'll pay for his entire convention and his hotel by shows that he's booked locally, and the fact that, and I tell this to other people, like, how does he do that? I'm like, well, I'm sure if you start asking enough questions, you'll figure out how to book shows locally. But he'll book school shows across country. And that's, you know, he's a worker. He's a real, real smart worker about that.
Yeah, man, never underestimate the power of who do you know that knows. Because, you know, that 6 degrees of separation is not only true for connecting you to Kevin Bacon, but it's also true to connecting you to the next person who wants to hand you a check. So if you just start asking, who do you know that books? Yeah, and just call a stranger. Call a hotel there in the area. Say, hi, you know, I'm trying to get booked to so-and-so. You know, is there event planners that work in your area? Blah, blah, blah. And if you have monetary resources, you could buy those lists. But to be honest, which is going to make a bigger impression, you know, you tracking them down and talking to them and calling them directly, or you sending out some kind of mass email to them?
It's amazing what is available to you for the price of mild telephone humiliation / awkwardness.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And you know, the people who do that really well too is it. And I've talked to some people here who, you know, talk about a couple like legendary sort of bookers, who guys who are always, you know, they what they do is they know party planners and clients and stuff will call them for shows. And if they can't do it, they will, somebody said, yeah, like, yeah, I was there. I did a show with him. And he picks up the phone and he says, okay, yeah, what day do you need? Saturday? 2 hours? Yeah. You know, this is the rate, you know, 500. Yeah, fine. Okay. Let me call you right back. Frank, got a show, call me back. Bill, got a show, call me back. Steve, got a show, call me back. Bring, bring, bring. Frank, hey, Frank, all right, Saturday, 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, it pays $350, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And yep. Can you do it? Good. All right, cool. Yep, got a guy, da-da. I mean, watched it just happen in the span of just, he just left the message, first come, first person to respond. He didn't call and wait for that person to get back to him.
Yeah,
just,
well, and that's the nice thing about being a kind of a known quantity. I don't want to say he's a pickpocket magic show is a commodity act, but the nice thing is that you could say it's a pickpocket magic show and people instantly know what to expect. That was my biggest challenge when I got started, was by poorly, or, you know, I don't know, coyly defining my show as bizarre magic. I had an uphill battle to explain why shoving nails in my eyes and blood and guts was going to go over well at the company Christmas party. But I don't think you'll have any of that trouble with your act, James.
So that's the only one we had sent in.
No, but that was good. We got some mileage out of that. We got almost 20 minutes out of there.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Hey, can we get a little more in-depth report? Talk, because I think a big part of what we were talking about just now for James was the idea of self-imposed hustle. And I, in my entire life, cannot think of anyone at this moment who's imposing on himself more hustle than Justin Robert Young. How much did you guys pile on your plate? And what would you do different if you were going to be in New Hampshire?
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing for us right now is, you know, we'll see after tomorrow. You know, we've recorded a lot of television interviews, we've done a bunch of a print press or blog press kind of stuff. Yeah, we're going to see the haul. I mean, we're going to see what we did. You know, if everything comes in like it was recorded, then we're going to have, you know, Iowa local television, pool reporters from all the NBC or Fox stations, I forget which, across the country. We did an interview with the pool reporters, did an interview with NHK, which is Japanese public television, with WNBC, the market NBC affiliate. So we've done a bunch of stuff. And if we get all that, if we have the contender in all that, then, you know, I don't know how much in terms of its broadcast reach it immediately sells games, but it certainly gives us the claim that we are like among the most talked about board games or card games of the year, right?
Well, and
we can continue to build that narrative.
That's the funny part, right? Like, this reminds me so much of when I first started touring, I would make sure to have an updated website all the time showing every single event. If it was a free show I was doing at a library, I would put, you know, Waukesha, Wisconsin on there because I was going to be in Waukesha, Wisconsin on that day because I wanted to legitimately portray myself as somebody who was very busy on tour all the time. And what's funny is once you have the trappings of that and they're accurate, then people start calling you up and treating you like that. And you and by virtue of, and not that you're faking anything, you are just interested in claiming the mantle of the most talked about political card game on the planet. So you are doing the things that the most talked about, of course the most talked about political card game would go to the caucuses. And so, and here you are creating, you are willing this position and this reputation into existence.
Yeah, and you know, part of it is just you know, getting it out there. You know, we really, I think in terms of prime time sellability for this game, you know, it starts tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, it starts with the caucus. You know, it we've seen the point of kind of declining ratings on really the highest numbers that we've ever seen for primary debates. But even then, they went up. You know, they reversed the trend after the last debate because things had gone so kind of kooky before it. And I think we're going to see it continue. I think we're going to see more people pay attention to it as the stakes kind of get higher and higher. So, you know, with all that in mind, you know, this is just kind of what it is. You know, we're going to have to take a good hard look at the numbers kind of tomorrow and the next day in terms of not only what we sold on the website, but we've had a real good week on Amazon as well, you know, just kind of keeping stuff out there in the public's eye. So, you know, when we take a look at all that, we'll see whether or not we'll be there in New Hampshire. But now New Hampshire is a easier sell for us to get media because now we've already been covered by media, you know, and that's, you know, another, just a huge key part of it is like, and also it's like, you know, we made a bunch of contacts at like the Bernie camp, for example. And it's like that their national office is in Vermont, which means that everybody that we met that was from their national office in Iowa will definitely be in New Hampshire, which is very close to Vermont, based on my geography skills. So, you know, I don't know. We don't know whether or not we're going to go to New Hampshire, but you know, it's certainly you know, the big key is just kind of just go, be places, do things. And really, the biggest thing that we've actually had, and this is so funny, is we've had these silly hats. We got two sky blue mesh trucker hats that we then put a bunch of promotional pins for the contender on, so they just look like the stereotypical campaign rally crazy old coot hat. And I swear to God, like, our, you know, all of our best laid plans, inventing this card caucus thing and getting all these mason jars with corn kernels and booking all these venues, have all been great, right? But I don't think anything has got us as much attention as people just walking by and squinting at us and asking us, what's the deal with our hats?
Dude, and in that regard, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, of course, in retrospect, like, what was it that attracted us to Dan Rollman and the Record Center crowd? Were their baller ass retro 1970s sports blazers that they were wearing?
Yeah, no, it's. It's so silly, you know. It's you know, I don't quite know what the alchemy is for it, but you know, there's just a ton of press. You can't throw a rock without hitting somebody with a broadcast television camera. It's really thick, you know, all through here. But you know, from this point, you know, we've gotten good social traction. You know, it's not a breakaway explosive social traction, but we've certainly kept all of our lines a lot busier. I think we've bound people a lot more to the product, which is good. Now it's like, you know, we've done a lot, you know, coming out of this. I think what we hoped for was either the product to kind of catch fire here or to continue to build everything you need for it to really, really catch fire. And I don't think it's really caught fire per se, but I think we've done a lot to kind of build toward that. And it's taken a lot, you know. You just got to be in the right place at the right time in a lot of situations. You have to know how to approach people. You got to know, you know, like yesterday on Channel 13, the NBC affiliate here in Des Moines, I was in the tease for their local news, the first tease for their local news, and I was in the A block, largely because I know how to give a sound bite. I worked as a reporter, and I know that I need to keep the most impactful, excited sentence I can say to 16 words.
Give us an example of one.
And that's it.
Yeah, give us an example.
Well, it's funny because I use the same thing that I was joking about on Night Attack this week, where I, you know, they're like, oh, so you're excited about the caucus? And I had the same, you know, so some of my friends want to go to Coachella. Some of my friends want to go to big conventions like Comic-Con. All I've ever wanted to do was come to for the Iowa caucus, and boom, it's the A block of your local news.
Dude, well, I'll tell you what, man, major congrats on the hustle. I got to tell you, as somebody who enjoys watching the story, because, you know, you're kind of running your own, thanks to social media, you're running your own reality TV show about the launch of the Contender game, and you're making yourself a part of, you know, the biggest story on the planet, maybe in the planet these days. I for one would like to subscribe and see you guys in New Hampshire as well.
Well, you know, we'll see. It's interesting, you know, because we were looking at the Amazon numbers and we've done the best week we've ever done on Amazon, which, you know, is again its own sort of weird bargain, because, you know, we don't make a ton when we sell on Amazon comparatively to if we sell off the website, but you know, it's like Walmart, you know, you're going to take a cut in what you're making per product, but the goal is that you sell in a ridiculous volume. And, you know, that Amazon's really the only market that offers that kind of fire hose. And you know, doing well there helps with their algorithms help with their mailers, you know, equal overnight, you know, we're selling in the hundreds to in the tens of thousands.
Right on.
Good point. Gentlemen, can we go to picks?
Ah, man, I don't know that I have any picks specifically for After Things this go around. You know, I'm plowing through, sort of took a pause on my Audible spree to get caught up on all my podcasts, and so my intake is less than it should be. Plus, we're getting ready to head out on vacation. My pick is to take a vacation. Go for the first time with your children. Take them skiing or snowboarding.
I'll go in with my pick, Justin, unless you want to go first.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I want to recommend a business book, and I don't think I've ever recommended it here on Air Things. Probably came up on a Weird Things at some point, but I want to reiterate this pick because it was written by a businessman with a lot of experience and a lot of thoughts on brand building and sometimes how to take perhaps an inferior product but present it as being superior or something that would be in demand. And a lot of lessons about life, about living. When he first wrote this, I would say that he was certainly a well-known business person, but his notoriety actually he was kind of on the waning years of his significance, and then they actually increased, and he became, you know, resurgent, and people became aware of his many different enterprises and things he's involved with. And this is the 10-year anniversary of when this book came out, and it was actually recommended to me by our friend Jamie Porter, who we've mentioned before, and he gave me a copy of it, or gave me the CDs of this thing, and I listened to them and enjoyed it thoroughly, and I recommended it to Justin. I think I actually bought them for him. And I'm speaking of Sex, Money, Kiss by Gene Simmons.
That book's great.
And it turns out he's got a new book, or had a new book come out 2 years ago called Me, Inc., which looks like it might be kind of maybe go over some of the same material. But I have not read that, don't know about that. But I will tell you, Sex, Money, Kiss is, if you want to understand Gene Simmons and how he built what he built, I highly recommend it. You can get it, you know, Kindle for $10, audio for $20. You know, Gene Simmons narrating this to you is actually really kind of awesome. It's I enjoyed it, and I would recommend it.
Was he born in America, or was he born in Israel?
I think he was born in Israel. I think he was born there.
In an era where Donald Trump is doing so well, it would not, a Gene Simmons run for president would not shock me.
There are
similarities there, although I do believe that Gene Simmons is by far a better businessman than Donald Trump.
Yeah, Gene Simmons was born in Israel.
Yeah, so he couldn't run. But yeah, no, I mean,
depends on who his mom was, or his dad was. I mean,
oh, fair point. Yeah, I mean, like, ask Ted Cruz. You know, you make a really good point. If you don't, I mean, listen, fair warning. This is like you know, the nutritional label that warns for nut allergies, right? If you are allergic to people talking about themselves like demigods, then just understand this is not going to be for you. If you can take that in a good-natured spirit,
If I was able to make it through, was it Grant Morrison's Super Gods? Does that mean I'll be able to make it through this?
I mean,
when you're listening to an audiobook about Gene Simmons telling you how he became famous and successful, you have to remember that you're listening to an audiobook by Gene Simmons.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to buy it right now.
And there's a lot of in New York in the 1970s, real estate was at a prime, but I realized that you could build up, and therefore I tripled my wealth by building up instead of building sideways. Like, I'm best. You know, and there's a lot of stuff there. I mean, but within that, I mean, like, there's a reason why, you know, for a band that musically is fairly limited, you know, it sells out pretty much, you know, a very kind of venue while you know, firing members of the band as if they were fast food workers. Like, he's exceptional. The book's exceptional. And if you want to think about building a brand, man, that dude has had every thought in the book about it. Some of them probably even bordering on crass, you know, but certainly it's something that is worth.
I don't think they border, Justin.
I think it. Yeah. He is firmly exploring, you know, when and where, you know, when you get to the point of Kiss coffins, because Gene Simmons looks at the demographic breakdowns of his concert attendees and realizes that they are in the market for buying coffins. you know that dude is spreadsheet minded.
Wow. Wow. That's awesome.
He talks about when he was a kid and the Beatles came on the Ed Sullivan Show, and he looked at them in their little suits and their bull haircuts, and he hated them. His mom goes, "Ugh, who are they? They look like monkeys." And Gene says, "They're the Beatles, and I love them." and he intuitively grasped, you know, the difference between generations. Like, you don't like it? Well, I'm going to love it. And that was, you know, but much – you look at the number of rock that worked that way, Alice Cooper, Marilyn Manson, and other people who said, oh, you know what? If the adults hate us, the kids are going to love us.
That's amazing.
Gentlemen, it's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.